This is Phil from Soundcheck Books. We are publishing Young Flesh Required, Growing Up with the Sex Pistols by Alan G. Parker with Mick O'Shea. Now, a lot of Alan's fans have written in asking him to answer questions about his relationship with the Sex Pistols, etc. And many of these reprobates can be found on the God Save the Sex Pistols website. So Alan is going to answer those questions today. So let's go for it. Alan, your starter for 10. Do you have a favourite Sex Pistols song?
Yes, I would probably say Satellite. I don't know why, but the B-side of All the Days in the Sun has always been one that hit me right between the eyes. I really like that song. And, of course, the book that changed around my entire life and took me from being just a jobbing writer to that guy who people pointed at and went, I think that's him, is Satellite. So I suppose it ticks all the boxes, definitely.
Right. The next one's a bit of a weird question, but I'm sure you'll know the answer. Are the Sex Pistols a punk group?
I know who actually sent this question in. Are the Sex Pistols a punk group? And I know what he wants me to say, and I'm probably going to say it. I don't think so, and I'll tell you for why. Captain Sensible made an amazing comment many years ago. He said, the first time I heard Anarchy in the UK, it sounded like nasty Black Sabbath riffs with Old Man Steptoe screaming over it. And I think he's dead right. I think that given, you know, is it right that we say Metallica are a thrash metal band and yet they recorded The Unforgiven, which is a wonderful ballad? And I think the Pistols have got a lot of factions to them. And if we say that, for instance, The Exploited or GBH are a punk band, then it's wrong for me to say that the Sex Pistols are a punk band, but that's only my opinion.
Right, what about The Clash?
Clash, I would say, again, are a rock band. Rock and roll group, you know. They may have made two punk albums, but we'll forever remember them for London Calling, and that's a rock and roll album. So.
Brotherhood of Man, they were one of their contemporaries. No, maybe not. What do you think your greatest achievement is in the group's name?
About 2 or 3 years ago now, there was a 100th anniversary of Converse trainers, the shoe that everybody should wear. That's what I'm wearing today. And Converse had this big campaign all the way around the world in the underground tube stations, London, New York, Tokyo, wherever. And they got the images of 20 icons who'd worn Converse in their time, most of whom were dead and buried, and put images of them out there saying, you know, you should wear Converse because John Lennon did or because Bob Marley did or whatever. And I was the one via the estate who cleared all the rights for Sid's image, who made Sid a part of that campaign, and who championed and initially got Sid into being part of that campaign. So I think it was nice that, you know, God knows how many years after his death, we had him on every underground station all around the world for a period of about 2 months. I thought that was quite an achievement.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, your next question is, and it's obviously from a Doctor Who fan, if you could go back in time, would you change anything?
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't write as many books about Sid Vicious. I think I'd probably just have done one, and I think that one would have been No One Is Innocent. But then hindsight's a British disease, and every one of us suffer from it. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Now, someone says that they get the feeling you are more Rock and Roll Swindle than Filth and the Fury. Correct?
I think it's 100% correct. I think if you're a Sex Pistols fan of a certain age, like most of us are, then you are very much more Rock and Roll Swindle, because bear in mind, a lot of us, you know, we saw The Clash, we saw The Jam, we saw The Stranglers, but we didn't see The Pistols because they were either being banned by a local council or they weren't playing the right town. And so when Swindle opened in, 1980, we all just flocked to the cinema. And I don't know about all the other fans out there, but I can say very honestly, for me, I went to the local cinema in Blackpool, in Manchester, in Blackburn, in Bolton. I think I saw it 4 times in a fortnight because it was my only access at that point. There was no DVDs or VHS tapes in them days, remember? This was my access to this band I loved. So I think because of all those memories, certainly, and my criticism of Filth and the Fury, which will never change, is, you know, as a filmmaker myself now, why film the main protagonists in bloody silhouette? They're not escaped train robbers, they're Sex Pistols. And I think sometimes facial expressions can say a whole lot more than words do. And the fact that we can't see those facial expressions, for me, makes The Filth and the Fury a wee bit difficult to follow. There's some great footage in there, but as a movie, I'd have remade it, Julian, and let's see who's talking next time. Sorry, mate, but, you know, there you go.
Well, let's just hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. One of the things I most like about the book, and I've got to give the book a plug here because we're publishing it, but is the way you talk about the various Sex Pistols reunions, and you don't actually pull any punches. I mean, you call it as you see it. What was it upset you about some of the gigs that they did?
I mean, to me, again, you know, as I said earlier, a lot of the bands, you know, it's a very selfish thing to say, but it didn't matter to me that The Jam didn't reform because I saw The Jam. It didn't matter to me The Clash didn't reform because I saw The Clash. Pistols, we didn't see, you know. I know maybe three people from up north who did actually see The Pistols. That's the end of story, you know. And a million others who swear they did, but of course, never did. 96 reunion was cool because I think we're seeing something brand new. But I do believe you can over-egg a pudding, and I also believe that if you're going to take that much money off people for tickets, a little thing called rehearsals might be a good thing to do. I wasn't disappointed by the Motley Hoople reunions. I went to 4 out of 5 nights in Hammersmith. I thought the recent Thin Lizzy comeback shows with my oppo Ricky Warwick on lead vocals were absolutely fantastic, even though Phil is irreplaceable. Rick's at least filled his shoes to a degree. But Crystal Palace and Brixton, and God forbid I would have ever thought about going anywhere near Hammersmith, it just seemed to me like a bridge too far. And it just seemed to me like it was more about selling T-shirts and selling tickets than it was about actually doing a conscientiously great show. Crystal Palace was horrible. Anybody who's there knows that.
And you don't like going to South London.
Yeah. What's the saying I used to say? It's rehearsals, not brandy, John. You get it now? Good.
Actually, supplementary question. Yeah. When are they going to play again? Do you know?
I mean, the rumour mill's always rife when they're going to play again, you know. One would imagine, given that next year is the Queen's next jubilee, that it'll be next year. All the rumours say next year. So I would put my money on 2012.
Right. We'll hold you to that. Good. Would you describe yourself as a big Sex Pistols fan, somebody asks?
No, never at all. I mean, the lads who know me very well in that circle, I'm talking now about people who are close to the book, for instance, like Sixth, Brian, OPG, Daryl Millen, all them kind of guys. They know I'm not a big Sex Pistols fan. I'm not even a big punk fan. I like a few punk bands. I've worked with an awful lot of punk bands. You know, I'm a metal kid who loves glam rock. You know, and I think the tattoos and the jewellery are a bit of a giveaway now and then. But but the truth is, you know, I'm Metallica, I'm Motley, I'm Iron Maiden. You know, I'm Slade, I'm Sweet, I'm Mud. That's my world. And you know, the Pistols graced it for a few short months back in the dim and distant past. And because of Sid's mother, and no, I can't lay the blame anywhere else, it became a career. But it wasn't planned that way. It just happened. You know, so am I a big Sex Pistols fan? Well, I haven't listened to Nevermind the Bollocks in the last 5 years. I guess a big Sex Pistols fan might have done, so let's just leave it at that.
Fair play. Now, there's loads of interviews in the book with loads of different people, and some of them are pretty controversial. So what's the most jaw-dropping one in the book, do you reckon?
I think the most jaw-dropping stuff in the book probably comes from Rodan, because he's always refused to do an autobiography. But he, you know, as many people who know him very well as we do will tell you, he is actually quite a private person. He's not one of these who puts himself out there when there's a bunch of fans out there and around. In fact, in most cases, he'd rather go and not be noticed on some of the Jubilee parties that the Pistols experience have done. He would rather be there and not be name checked than be there and be name checked. And I think because of that, and because of our very long friendship now, I mean, we're talking about 15 years plus me and the Rodan. I do see this as being quite close to a Rodan biography in many places, certainly.
Yeah, he's certainly in the book a lot, isn't he? And I never knew that the song I'm in Love with a German Film Star was written for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things happened to Rodan over the years that have, you know, the mists of time have washed away, but very few people know that he was in a soap opera on German television, speaking in German, and mobbed in the streets for autographs for a good 4 or 5 years after the Pistols.
So one more question, and it's a controversial one to finish on. Obviously, Malcolm and John, what should we say, they didn't always see eye to eye. And somebody said, who do you think is right, Malcolm or John?
Yeah, difficult. I mean, if it comes down to friendship, then obviously Malcolm and I got on really well. He opened a million doors for me. He wrote forewords for my books. He was in some of my movies. He's in documentaries I've done. He's in radio stuff I've done. He was never not helpful. God bless him. Whenever you rang him, he would come back in 30 seconds from an answer phone message and do anything he could for you. The presumption also is that John and I apparently don't get on very well. The reality is John and I don't know each other very well. When we have hooked up and been together, I can think of a couple of great occasions. Easy Eye Studios, when I was there with the Fingers and he was there with Pill. Some hotel near Hyde Park, when again I was there with the Fingers and he was there with Pill. And we talked and we laughed and we drank beer and we had a great time. But again, as it says in the book itself, if I had a pound for every lie that's been manufactured or told about me and the Pistols, I'd be a multimillionaire. I just think some people, it's, you know, George X, I think, probably puts it best when he says, what you've got to try and take in, Alan, is a lot of these people are quite jealous about what you've done. That's why they're spreading the rumours they're spreading. So if they get off on that, fine. I get off on making movies right now and promoting this new book, so that's fine by me too. There you go.
And I have to say, you do a really, really nice afterword, a little eulogy to Malcolm in the book, which is actually really touching about his death. So well done. Alan, it's been fun. Thanks very much indeed. And anyone listening to this, please buy Young Flesh Required. We need the money. Bye.